Hello, friends, grace greetings, and welcome to the Deeper Daily Podcast for July the 1st, the very first day of the seventh month of the year. I'm Paul White, and I'm honored you're with me on the Deeper Daily Podcast. If you didn't listen to yesterday's essay edition, go back and check it out. It's my thoughts on what's happened in the first 6 months of the year and how optimistic I am for the last half of the year, though admittedly, it is difficult to see clearly, so we deal a little bit with the idea from a spiritual standpoint of what seeing clearly might look like, and from a practical standpoint, how you can sort of aid that process along. So check that out, available yesterday as the DDP. We are heading towards the end of 2 Corinthians. We have just a little ways to go in chapter 12, and then, of course, there's the 14 verse 13th chapter, which is coming up. So over the next week or two, we should get through this. Then we will be starting or just doing some other things through July to get us through to the top of August, where we'll start a new book. Today, I am going to read to you from the ESV, not because it has some sort of particular, it's particularly good in this passage, but because it's the Bible I had with me when I come to do podcasts today. I didn't pick up my regular preaching study Bible. Instead, I had this other Bible that I read from on my own, and I thought, well, let's try that. So if it sounds a little different today, it's because I'm reading from the ESV, and normally I read from the New King James, and then we just talk about the Greek and those things. So let's begin in verse 11 from 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and I want to read a couple of verses today, and we're going to talk a little bit about apostles. I've been a fool. You forced me to it, for I ought to have been commended by you, for I was not at all inferior to these super apostles, even though I am nothing. The signs of a true apostle were performed among you with utmost patience, with signs and wonders and mighty works. And here we get the idea, we finally see why it is that Paul is on the defensive. Paul realizes, or at least thinks, he's made a fool of himself over these last few chapters, defending his apostolic authority, talking about a little bit like, well, I did this and this and this, trying to talk about the things he's endured and the things he's put up with, his visions, his sufferings, his thorn in the flesh. And he says, you know, I know it's foolish, but you forced me to do it. And I think what he's talking about, the fact that he's had to boast about his apostolic weakness, because the people that knew him so well, the Corinthians, didn't defend him against false apostles and untrue criticism. In fact, not only did they not offend him, but Paul believed they had been seduced. Remember in chapter 11, in verses 1 to 3, that really started this whole foolishness thing, although he really starts defending his ministry in chapter 10. I want to reread for you the first three verses of chapter 11. I wish you'd bear with me in a little foolishness. Do bear with me, for I feel like a divine jealousy for you, since I betrothed you to one husband to present you as a pure virgin to Christ. But I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. I think that Paul is not only trying to lay out the idea that you should be purely devoted to Jesus and don't be deceived into something else. He's laying out the concept that, listen, you guys are a little wishy-washy. You follow the latest fad. And I feel foolish that I've had to spend so much time defending myself in front of you, but it is necessary because you didn't do it for me. And sometimes you have to step up and defend the theology, the doctrine, or the honor of people that you love and appreciate. Because you're in a world, there's never going to be universal acceptance. My wife and I were talking this week about the state of the gospel, the state of the church, and I said, you know, I am more convinced, I think, than ever, that we would honestly struggle with Jesus if he came to the modern church in the physical man. And I was thinking in terms of Jesus the table turner. You know, what caused Jesus to get angry to turn the tables? It was whenever what was going on in the temple didn't represent his father. Well, my gosh, he'd probably have a lot of good reasons to overturn some tables in the church today. I'm not even gonna say why I think he would. I'm just going to leave that out there for you. I'm not really prepared to say why I think he would. I know why I think he would, but I'm not really prepared to say it to all of you. But I think he'd turn some stuff over, and I think it would shock us, the stuff he'd turn over, because it doesn't look like him. It looks like our version of him. And our version of him is definitely culturally influenced, and it's fine that we have our version. I'm not talking about the physical either. We've had this debate lately going on about out of the stream of civil unrest that's going on. Should these statues be taken down? And then someone proclaimed that all the stained glass windows of a white Jesus should be taken down. And there were Christians, and there are Christians, who feel like that's some form of persecution or an attack of the enemy to remove Jesus. I'm not here to argue the racial part of it, but the first thing that struck me was, why have we ever felt like we knew Jesus in the flesh? Paul admits in 2 Corinthians 5, we don't know him according to the flesh. So why have we ever thought we represented him in art? Why have we ever felt like, well, I kind of know what he looked like? The early church didn't ever give us a physical description of Jesus. And maybe it wasn't, just, it's not because they're not good writers, it's because it never mattered. And that's just, maybe that's just one example of what he might turn over. My whole point in that is to say that sometimes it seems like we should stand and defend the ones whose heart we know. It's different when you get attacked for the things you say or teach or preach, and then when you get attacked by people that love you. Because everybody attack what you say or think or preach, it wouldn't matter. My whole point in that was that I think they would attack Jesus. You get this idea, well, the only one that make everybody get along is Jesus. Oh, no, don't be naive. Jesus never, he didn't even make everybody get along when he was here. He's not going to make, everybody wouldn't get along about him if he was here in the flesh today. So that no way. So everybody's not going to see eye to eye on it anyway. But it is worth defending the ones you love. Peter was faced with that crisis, warming his hands by the charcoal fire. The woman says, aren't you one of his followers? Peter says, no, I don't follow him. Why does he do that? Well, it's fear. I mean, there's a really good chance Jesus is going to be convicted of some sort of insurrection, and if so, the Romans will crucify him. And Peter's just like us. He's scared to die. And Peter goes, I don't know him. And the rooster crows. And you know the story. And why doesn't he defend Jesus? Well, I don't know the psychology behind it, and I certainly don't. I'm not going to answer for Peter, but maybe it's the same reason Paul felt he needed to defend himself. Sometimes we have to. Well, I meant to talk about apostles. I didn't. We will tomorrow. So, I'll see you then. God bless.